Blog Talk Radio.
My stuff right now, but here we go.
This is the voice of Mocha 868, and you're listening to The Living Room, brought to you by El Nostro Reino Radio. Welcome to our kingdom.
Now we're starting it out in the right way. Welcome, everybody, to the living room. We're excited to have you here today. We've got a great jam-packed show for you guys. A lot of poetry coming up today. But before that, I want to let everybody know that we have a special event going on, a little bit of a game called Prompt Your Partner. We're asking people to sign up. And what's going to happen is you're going to get paired with someone. And what you're going to do is you're going to go to our prompt pile, which is in a different topic, and find them a prompt to write to, and they will find you a prompt to write to. And we're going to go ahead and read those off on a future show and have everybody vote on who did the best in their little challenge. So we invite everybody to sign up right now. The topic is on the Il Nostro Regno board, and we're all excited about that one too. So we've got that going on, and while we wait for that, we're going to continue on with the living room. And today we have open poetry, a little bit of everything, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. We are going all over the place, and we're just pumped up about what we got to do. I want to say, first of all, hello to everybody out there internationally and wherever you're listening to. Right now I see Gonzo's on the board listening in from Canada. We've got Titus listening in from the UK, and we've got Nina Hart listening in from Croatia. So it's great to have everybody all over the place listening in. We love you all, and we thank you all for your support in everything we do. And we're heard in every continent except Antarctica. Let's get the word out to Antarctica, everybody. That would be great. The science station Antarctica listens to our poetry. That would be kick ass. Oh, I'm telling you what. But bear with me a little bit. The throat is a little bit sore, but we're gonna do a great job. Gonzo in Newfoundland. Awesome. And here we go, guys. Bum, bum, bum. All right. I am taking a look at the poetry we have. We have a lot to read and a lot to listen to. And what I'm going to do is I think I'm going to play an audio here. Hold on one second. I need my phone to behave a little bit here. I think what I'm going to do. Gosh, this is, you know, when you get a bunch of poems, you know, you're like, what should I start with first? Yeah, I'm going to start with a little bit of John, J-E-G. And I will go ahead and read this poem. Get my voice worked up a little bit. And we will have Mocha joining us here very shortly. So just be excited about that, everybody. So this is JEG325, Tomorrow the World. Daylight sky turned to coal black. Was this all about a boy and a girl? Acid rain covered burning ground, and I thought, tomorrow, the world. Would the morning sun rise again? How I hoped my alarm would ring, just to witness dawn's pastel glow, while I heard happy blue jays sing. But just as love died a bitter death, the planet spun in unheard agony. Darkness held my world in its vice to the skies where lost dreams flee. Yes. Daybreak arrived with its shadows in a glass cage, final stone hurled. What is broken cannot be repaired. And I thought, tomorrow, the world. Oh, geez, that was haunting. I absolutely loved it. Hello, Mocha.
Hi, Jay.
How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing pretty all right today. I got coffee. I got up kind of early. You know, it's a good start to the day.
Yes, it is. I went ahead and ordered breakfast, had breakfast brought over to me, so I got a nice meal in before doing all the audio and getting that up and doing little special things here and there. So I'm really excited about this show. And J.E.G.'s piece that I just got done reading called Tomorrow the World. I thought it was very haunting.
It came in right at the end.
Yes, yes. It was very haunting in that, you know, it's relatable about love happening and then love dying. And we walk through that journey, which is love, that pretty much is our world at the time surrounded. We put so much into it, so much effort, and so much of ourselves that we do all of that, and yet the world still goes on no matter what happens. And I think that right there is a telling tale about what goes on, you know. But just as love died a bitter death, the planet spun in unheard agony. That tells it all right there. And I think that is a very powerful piece. I look at the AN, it says, what does a bitter breakup have to do with the world's end? ? Finality. I like that.
Yeah. Gave it a quick read, and it is quite. I love the first stanza. See that turn to cold black. Was this all about a war? Acid rain, burning ground. I love that. I love that. You know, a literal translation of when you feel as though you're growing something, everything in the world is gray. It's like that saying, you know, smile and the world smiles. If you think it goes both ways, cry, then the world cries with you and as well. The phrase, tomorrow the world makes me tough. It sort of sounds as though this person's sadness is so intense that it brings about the end of not only their personal world, but we all live in. And that is some really, really intense.
Awesome insight on that one. All right. Are you open for one of a recording here? It's been a while since you heard some of these recordings. How about a little Phil the Poet? Here we go.
This is a poem by Phil the Poet called Acorn Manor. Dreams are woven within the walls of Acorn Manor. Words penetrating deep within love's banner. The pen skates along the virgin white screen, bleeds with tears at what is yet to be seen. Stories are birthed within the chambers of Acorn Manor, breaking the bedroom mirror with a silver hammer. Pieces lying like a stutterer's rhyme upon the floor, seeps into reality through the hole in the door. P peek inside the window to see the story unfold. Follow the adventure, becoming so courageous, so bold. The quill skips as it dances upon a maiden's heart, seeking the one who charmed her so after dark. This is the place where the imagination is created, where intense drama and fun anticipated, all within this little house in an enchanted wood, where it's pouring forth from a poetical flood. Turn the handle and step through the door. Enter into a world you've never seen before. A turn of a key and the light goes out. Trembling with fear, you wonder what it's all about. Welcome to my humble abode, my perfect creation. Brought forth from pen and paper incantation, I can fulfill all your needs, your yearning desire, or crumple you up and throw you on the fire. End poem.
Oh, I love that. I love the way that that's put together. What do you think, Mocha?
I like it, but I don't know why I'm so stuck on what the Acorn Manor actually is. Some part of me is just trying to figure out exactly. Understand? Where is the Acorn Manor? Is it a reference to something? Is it something you know? I don't know. But I'm fascinated with it because of the poem. And, like, I clearly we want to go there, you know?
Here's what I think it is, and this is what I grabbed a hold of it. This is a poem about a writer writing a story about a fictional place called Acorn Manor.
That would make sense. That would make perfect sense, actually. See, but now I have even more questions. Like, if first of all, if that's the case, this is some poetry inception that he just did here. He just, like, in a weird way, broke the fourth wall. And
that's exactly what I was thinking too.
Like, yeah, because and now also I want to know what the story that the fictional writer is writing about it. Like, I want to know what that story is. The first story in the inception loop. I want to know what that story is and then come back to read about the story that the other writer is writing. It's a little confusing, but it's kind of... When you think of it
like
that.
I get it. I get exactly what you're saying because ultimately, this almost seemed like an opening monologue poem for a story that's getting ready to happen.
It's...
What was that?
This is
You're
for me,
still
days. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're just cutting out a little bit here and there.
All right. Phil's words, the way he structures this, it's graceful and descriptive all the time. Dreams are woven within the walls. It's a little bit more than just being in the walls. They're part of everything. The pen skating off the virgin white screen bleeds with tears at what is yet to be seen. That really does you an image of somebody sitting at their desk sort of scribbling, you know, and with excitement that, I'm writing this thing that nobody else has seen yet, and I can't wait to show people. That's definitely an artist, for sure.
Oh, yeah. He is so versatile and what he's able to do. He is very cerebral. He's able to kind of.
Go ahead. We do this all the time.
We have a lag, that's why.
Yeah. I was going to say he makes every little bit of the manor alive. So, like, the windows and the breaking the bedroom mirror with a silver hammer, pieces lying like a stuttered rhyme upon the floor. For some reason, it seem alive. You know, why does that make everything seem more vivid? Like, the beauty and the beast are all objects are something around, singing and dancing. It reminds me of that for some reason.
When I heard that, I was almost thinking, oh, it's got some secrets behind the walls that people don't normally see. And what are those secrets?
Nine just said on the board that he Googled it, and Acorn Manor is a nursing home. So a home for stories, basically. That's brilliant.
Yeah, there's, I don't know. I'd like to know where Acorn Manor is located, but I think it's in Phil's head, and I think there might be more that's going to come out of Acorn Manor.
Oh, I found it. I Googled it. It's a nursing home in Ellesmere, Port, England.
Oh, that's cool. That is so freaking cool.
I don't know if he did that on purpose, but if he didn't, and that just happened to him, it actually works perfectly for his poem.
He's, like I said, he's so cerebral in what he writes, and it's like little undertones that, like we said, breaks the fourth wall, but also jumps in a way that's going to make us think, make us look up, and he has little messages underneath his words, and I love that. All right, are you ready to read for us? You got
sure.
Irish. I got Irish. And she said that this one right here is like will be written out further, but there's like a little introduction to this. It will be written in several poems later, but this is kind of the condensed version.
Oh, I love the title already. So this is Trivial Thoughts. Page 1, the edited version, by Irish Moonlight Follows. And it goes. Creatures everywhere, none are near. The voice is loud, nothing is said. Their heads bowed, filled with grief, and still nothing is said. For none can hear the voices. None can hear the tears shed in drowning the once lively soul, now empty and lifeless in the prison that is now their mind. While parents are blinded in their blue and self-chosen naivety.
Wow. There's a couple things that kind of point out to me. I was hearing songs as we went along in this. The two songs that I heard, one was Comfortably Numb by Pink Floyd, and the other one was The Sound of Silence. You kind of mix them together, you know, Comfortably Numb. There is no pain, I am receding. Let me see. your lips move, but I can't hear what you say. And then the sound of silence is like self-explanatory.
I know it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I heard those two songs as it went along, for none can hear voices. Nothing is said. There's just silence. None can hear the tears shed in silence. And that's what I feel on this piece is it's just, there's so much pain and so much hurt, yet so much loneliness. It reminds me of the people who get lost in the crowd with hundreds of people around them, but they're still very, they feel lonely at the same time. And that's kind of how I felt a little bit about this.
Yeah. And I definitely see where you're coming from with the sound of silence reference. It does that same mood. What it did for me, bringing the music up, I had this itch, sort of Irish or girl, whoever, sort of wandering in the middle of nowhere. And she is surrounded by all of these creatures who perhaps once used to be human, mentioned. She said they were running, lively souls, now empty and life in the prison that is now their mind. Almost like imagining the zombie apocalypse happening, except the brains are just there. So they're just there lumbering around, sea and soulless. And like, imagine that. Imagine being the one person who seems to have their sanity or their mind, like wholeness, left. A sea of people whose minds see, or who are filled with negativity and who are just sort of lumbering around looking for anything that could maybe fill them. That's the imagery that this gave me. And I
incredible.
Thought this was really
mm-hmm.
powerful.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah, definitely. It gets emotion and power within it. All right. I'm going to go to Australia and read a little of Poeta da Cabra.
Oh. Is this our first from Poeta da Cabra? That we're reading.
I believe it is our first. Stanley is an incredible writer and an incredible rhymer. And I hope you enjoy this. This is called Release the Butterflies.
Ooh.
With her, it is different. Nerves are deceased. Sensual eyes and smile has butterflies released. Mesmerized, the scent of her womanhood lingers, has both me and butterflies on the tip of her fingers. Sight of her naked with hands behind her back fills me with desire instead of panic attack. First woman in ages that I believe I can trust has given me the feeling now of wantonness. Nipples are erect and I know the agenda. Stroke me gently with fingers long and slender. She guides me with perfection. Oh, what a mentor. Directs me to her moist lips, desiring me to enter. We'll make passionate love long through the night. Bodies will come together and I'll climax. Shudder. With her, all my tensions will be completely gone. And thanks to her, the butterflies are also a flutter. Poem.
Woo-wee! What a
good morning
to the show. Hi, good morning. How are you today?
Doing well.
Just double checking, Jay, what did we rate today's show? Is so PG because...
Now, we rated it PG-13, and this falls well within PG-13 here.
Okay, good. I still would like to state for the record, though, if you are under 18, please leave the room right now. Just say it. grown-up time. I will not
be held responsible. He can write consensual.
Right? Like, I didn't know I had a sensual show today. And it rhymed. I find that it's generally kind of hard to make sensual sometimes, at least for me. Because it makes it feel more storybook.
You're right. I am, you know, the pure sensuality and love, the trust that you put in another person within that moment, within that situation, I think really tells something about it. There's more than just the lust here, the sensuality. There is a lovingness that goes deeper than that. You know, when talking about trust, which is a very strong thing when you look at it.
Indeed. At that aspect of it as well, like, the reason that it was so sexy was because trust, you're also speaking about a love intimacy, and intimacy makes everything that much more personal, everything more special of that intimate connection with a partner. So everything becomes sacred at its just sex and anymore. It's sort of virtual, it's all deep connection, and so none of it is just pure lust. None of it came out as, you know, being dirty. This was a real intimate moment that we experienced in this poem.
I agree. Well, I'm going to go ahead and put 9 up next. Since he is the furthest east we have as far as the time zones go, I'm not exactly sure what time it is in his time zone, but I know that he is later than the UK, and UK right now is 5:30 at 17:30, or no, 6 o'clock right now, 1800, depending on how you look at it. So here's a little bit of Nine of Hearts. She sleeps.
She sleeps. A lullaby, my Nine of Hearts. On an isle that echoes, the phantom bellows. Where the growl of weeping willows is bowels. Where there slither serpents across the shallows. In the heart of it, a steeple towers from a black temple that the past swallowed back with ghouls that feed on the bone marrow. Up that spiral stairway steep. She sleeps. Supine and veiled and under a spell she sleeps. As the gale tosses in the murky saltness, and stirs myriads of sea monsters, and it roars choruses like a Stygian poetess as she weaves a cradle from the churn of waters for her fetal cannibal 9 daughters. With its claw unseen as it shatters, slaughters in one sweep, beneath that scythe man's reap. She sleeps. She sleeps. In a silken bed beyond doors of lead she sleeps. And the isle itself is a maze, a riddle full of shaman snares and warlock sigils. Seven witching sisters who deceive and swindle. Becks of hungry wendigos keeping vigil from the crevices in the mountain ridges. Gaping chasms under decayed bridges so, so deep. Where the mists of Hades creep. As she sleeps. As she sleeps. In her dance she hums with the deer she runs in her dreams. As a white rose lay neath her fingertips, at her pelvis, right between her hips, and her parted luscious rosy lips, poised to come alive to a true love's kiss, hold the promise of eternal bliss. There a warrior falls on his knees, and he weeps, sands of time from his palm seep. And she sleeps, still she sleeps. And he barely breathes, he can't face the seas, the beasts, not again, not alone. And a star then slips from the sky she dreams, as she blinks. Did it fade, or did it show? End poem.
All I gotta say here is, wow, this is a fantastic poem. There's a darkness overlying the whole poem here. Almost, I'm almost looking at this as so much going around this situation, but you have that one that sleeps up in the tower. It's kind of like a Sleeping Beauty. Theme that no matter what happens on the outside, she still is asleep, and there's no waking her up until the right situation arises. And this is all that is going crazy outside. I love how you bring in all of the different creatures, the cryptids, the stuff from mythology and everything like that. One that I can really relate to, since it is a common one here in the upper Midwest of the United States, is the Wendigo. And
the Wendigo, oh my God.
I love the Wendigo because I've used Wendigo in a bunch of my poems. There is actually a disease called Wendigo disease, Wendigo syndrome, where people all of a sudden think
really?
They have to eat other people. It's a cannibalistic disease.
Oh, yeah, no, I heard of that. Isn't it a mental illness?
Yes, it is a syndrome where people think that they are possessed by a Wendigo and they need to eat other people because of it, because it was all common within Native American tradition, especially around the Minnesota, Wisconsin, even up in the Canada area, that the Wendigo's main diet was flesh of a human. So the people would think, oh, I'm possessed by a Wendigo, I got to eat other people. And it's a crazy concept, but it's there. And I'm like, packs of hungry Wendigo, what are they going to eat if they're hungry? They're trying to pretty much devour people. And I take a look at all of that stuff that's twisted and turned within this thing and within this poem, and there's just so much to it. It's layer after layer of different things that I think that several people can relate to you. I can relate to. I know that Mocha can relate to several of what he's putting out here, and I think that that is the genius behind this poem, is it's more than just a story. It's more than just a rite. It's kind of like a call to other people. So I think it's amazing.
Yeah, Nine always sort of knocks it out of the park with the storytelling ability, or rather I should say the character building ability, because it's less that Nine tells story in the format of a story, similar to how Phil would do it. Like, Phil would just lay out the story and tell you that itself. What Nine does is he'll create a character, and the character tells the story, rather than Nine telling the story directly himself. So he's not actually telling the story. He's telling us about this girl, but it's like, because we get her story, because we have an idea of like her environment, what she's surrounded by, that's the context for this story. And I think that approach to storytelling is very unique and brilliant, and it makes all of his poems feel personal to the reader, because you will relate better to a character than a situation. And so having him always have a character available to tell the story through just makes you more sort of interested to his poetry. And yeah, I was wondering as we went through, what's the obsession with Sleeping Beauty days? Everybody's writing a Sleeping Beauty. Gonzo wrote a Sleeping Beauty series that we're still on. I have a Sleeping Beauty poem, and a Sleeping Beauty poem. It's that we're all fixated with one character, and yet everything that came out of it is completely different. Like, all different takes are, but you can't even compare them. They're very different. So, not Sleeping Beauty and Gonzo Sleeping Beauty are both sort of the dark genre. This is two completely different directions with where they choose to take a character. And this is the beauty for me in giving a bunch of people the same prompt or having a bunch of people write the same topic. It never turns out the same way twice. And it gives so much range with exploring a topic. And that's why I can't wait till after the prompt event to get back into prompted topics for the living room and have more of this happen, seeing more of everyone's different expressions, because this is so fun to me. Some notes poem itself, I love his image. I love the mentions of the weeping willows and the serpents in the shallows. And I loved this little bit of detail. He mentioned the Wendigos first, right? Packs of 100 Wendigos keeping vigil from the crevices in the mountain ridges. And then he goes to the next stanza and he says, her dance she hums with the deer she runs in her dreams. And you know, Wendigos are supposed to look like deer. She's running with the Wendigos. That's crazy. Like, that was such a cute detail that I'm not sure that anybody else noticed, but it was great. It was great. The rose laying neath her fingertips at her pelvis, right between her hips and her parted, luscious, rosy lips. That reminds me of Anne Rice's version of Sleeping Beauty. I don't know how many of you have read that. If you haven't, and you have a weak constitution, if your heart is weak, if you are triggered easily to traumatic event, don't read it. Don't read it. Don't read Anne Rice's version of Sleeping Beauty. But if you have read it, then you know exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm not going to explain it any further than that, honestly. It was beautiful. Beautiful job. 7-9. I'm sorry, I got some bad there, but it was that good.
Yeah. All right. I think, let me see, and I think this is a good time more than any. Are you ready, Mocha, for a little gift?
A gift? For me? It's not even my birthday.
Well, our dear friend from Great Britain, Titus, wrote you something extra special.
Really?
So,
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
But let's
sit back and just listen and enjoy.
Mocha 868. Earth Angel of Deliberation. Malevolent skies I'd have wished to see no more, but to lighten them of course a mocha. The transparency it brings upon what is an adagio, converging night. Her light refrain how far a distant day becomes mosaic. Her self-domain assures a tentative side of the dawn. And not to unleash alternative reply, how luscious sky can be created, why, you are my hero. Imagine, no urgency, how calmly influenced stirring coffee, 'tis like she. Letting go, 'tis like do or die, one can imagine the healing concept. To feel next to being overcome by beauty. The duty of us all to write is unseen opposed to letting go of this butterfly. A relishing obtinio, et tenioto, sicitur as astra. As the spring is the depth of winter, are you to assure us tenacious belonging to this kingdom? As this freedom, it is our birthright. Righteously the day as delight is far-fetching. It may seem we remember obvious acquaintance with the stars in stupor, here equivalent amoroso. Regal bearing shows repeated refrains do extend like petals do, thus far embroidered as I have never seen before. Flourish, let our words endure gracious melody, not forgetting Jupiter. Whose reign o'er love does bring narrations, procure many moons, the compel of following since time begun, observed as laws the natural habitat Mocha brings, is a smoother tempo.
Look at that. Then he writes down at the bottom, Angel 868. That is great. I love what he wrote there. The translations for what he wrote was obtain and to keep, thus one goes to the stars. First of all, the title, Earth Angel of Deliberation. My partner here, Mocha, is excellent, is incredible at picking apart poetry and getting to meanings and figuring them out. And I think that this is one of those pieces. This is a piece that helps describe that. There's so much to her, what she brings. I love the mention of the kingdom. And I think overall, this is just a beautiful tribute to a beautiful woman. And I think that you've done an amazing job here, Titus. But this is not about me. This is about my partner here, Mocha. How do you feel? Mocha, are you on mute? I see you're on the line, Mocha. Are you there? Hello? She might be overcome. I don't know. If not, I'll play it again. But it shows she's on the line. I'd have to figure out how to press her mute button. I can't hear her. No. Mocha, we can't hear you. Check your phone. Otherwise, I'm going to have her call back. Okay. All right. Yes. Did you see what you did, Titus? She said she's overcome. I know she loved it. And you've really touched her heart there, Titus. Amazing job. And I can't say enough about Mocha. She's just been a rock for this group. She's been a rock for me. She's really held things together. Let me see. Hello, dear. How are you doing?
I didn't hang up, I promise. I don't know why all of my audio went out, but maybe that was the universe hearing me for crying on air. Try to pull it together a little bit. Caught me at the most emotional time of the month. I for a word. I don't know what to say, Jay. I'm very, very overwhelmed personally right now. I didn't expect to he compare me to a constellation, a star?
Yeah, he compared you to an angel is what he compared you to in the heavens.
I'm trying to find words to sum up how I feel with going too much into detail. If I do a normal one. I don't know that I've ever felt so appreciated or so and it means a lot. Oh my god, guys, don't make me cut this. I'm gonna cry.
It's okay to be human. It's
everything.
Okay to cry. This was beautiful, and this was an incredible,
my
incredible
air, that's
tribute.
That's embarrassing. It was really.
You deserve stuff like this, though, Mocha, because of how awesome you are and how much of a rock you've been for people and how incredible you do for them. And there's a lot of people that don't recognize that, you know, which is a sad, sad state of affairs. But you deserve to be recognized.
Titus and everybody else too. I mean, it's amazing, and I'm so grateful that I have people who appreciate these things about me. But I don't think I would be as strong or as brave as I would be to do these things if I didn't. If I hadn't had you who put me into an environment like this, where you share writings and you share speaking with the people around. I've never used to be brave enough to do that until you found me. And you know, great. The stuff you write, people feel something. And if it weren't for that, then I would have never started down this. I started down this path because I wanted to be able to other people what me was not, it was not just a confidence, but a sense of belonging, a place to belong, and people to be with who would appreciate all your flaws or all the things that you think are shitty about yourself. And you did that to me. So that's why I wanted to be able to do that for other people. And this means a lot, and I'm going to probably cry about this again later in the day. Thank you so much, Jay, and thank you so much, Titus. This is the nicest, I think. You're an angel, Titus.
And let's see what Gonzo said. I'm sure I can speak for everyone when I say we are thankful we have you two doing these shows. I know for myself, if it wasn't for this platform, we wouldn't be together at this moment. I would probably be off somewhere depressed.
Same, Gonzo. Same.
Yeah, we got each other, so that's the important part. And I'm not going to make you read, okay? So you can sit, you can breathe a little bit while I read
please.
A little Obi.
Okay.
I'm going to read Obi. And this is called Freedom in Flight. I hope that lawnmower isn't too loud in the background. Freedom in flight. My eyes, boundless, are unbent to kiss the sky. Up, held not by fetters, but bird free to fly. Jet flight mends my spirit with loftiness by. Me, blue within my eyes, view vast and high. Outstripping gravity's hold across the mile, into my heart strength of the eagle sets a smile. With arms be stretched wide as the wings plumed with style, freedom's pace escalates like the jet's speed dial. The sun's beam adoring my aura is sweet. My mind from prison free, air friendly did meet. Freedom, like a blanket well over me, is neat. The dream of how now matured as fruit complete. The rushing of light like the creek uplifts me. To the stage of wind, great ecstasy I see. Freedom to reach the highest heaven, the key, that which grace did transform, dear, restraint to be. Poem. Oh, wow. He wrote this 11 years ago. And this is our dear friend Obinex. He is from Nigeria, so it's great to have him involved with us as well. And I love
Nigeria.
I love this poem right here. This poem is absolutely stunning and beautiful because it says we can spread our wings and fly. We can have freedom. When freedom is given to us, we can just, you know, just move around, just head on that jet stream and just go and go and go. And we get transformed into who we are supposed to be. It's a beautiful poem in that. I love it. There's so much positivity and so much hopefulness contained within it. All right, Mocha, what do you think about this?
Second, I was sniffling. I'll stop over. Sorry. I'm still gathering myself a little bit, Jay. that's not by Phyllis. I'm sorry, give me 2 seconds.
No problem.
Oh, this is nice. It's a freedom, which I think is a wonderful follow-up to what Titus just wrote, because that feeling of freedom, this topic that Obi wrote, is kind of precisely what I started this group for, or what I wanted to start the group for. One could feel like this. This freedom to reach the highest heaven, that which grace did transform their restraint to be. Oh, he sounds a little classical. Ooh, really nice. This is 11 years old, you said?
Yes.
Wow. He has probably grown so much as a writer from this point. But if this was his starting point, I cannot imagine how good he is now. I mean, everything about it gives you the sense of, have you ever stood on top of a really, really tall building and you look out and you can see the vastness of the sky and everything, and you look down and you know that down is probably not a right direction, but you feel so free seeing the sky in front of you that even though logically you know you're not going to fly, you feel like jumping.
Hmm.
You feel like, because you're so absorbed in the sky, you think, you know, there's no possible way with all this blue sky and all the clouds and all this wind that if I jumped, I'm off right now. Have you ever felt that feeling?
No, I know. I know what you're saying. I've stood on top of mountains before and looked out. So I know what you're saying. I used to live in North Carolina, and we lived about 10 minutes from a mountain, and used to climb that thing all the time. They had paths to go up the mountain, and used to stand there just looking out over everything.
Yeah, that is sort of precisely the feeling that I feel like he's describing in this poem. And that feeling, that sense of freedom, I want every person in this group to be able to feel that. Whether we are coalesced into a group or not, I want that feeling of freedom and submission to be yourself, express your truth, and express your emotion, to be so set within you that you don't have to be around the group to feel that and embody that and be that. I want you to be free all the time.
Now you're putting music into my head. I'm free to do what I want all the time. Okay. Yeah, you're putting Freeman in my head there. All right. I like that. All right. And I'm going to put a little Steve in there, and we'll listen to him. So here we go.
How I Long to Hold Lygia by Stephen 76. I sit in this cold tomb with nothing but a flickering candle and the body of my second wife. Oh, woe is me to be destined to live alone, now burying 2 spouses in the course of so few epochs. The cobwebs cast such eerie shadows as they dance from what little heat the flame gives, mingling with its smoke in a death waltz. How is it that I, less than a year ago, buried her which carried my very Numa into the worm-filled dirt which covered her pureness? And now I sit with a moribund maiden, no longer rigid from rigor mortis, but soft to the finger's touch, yet a coldness to her skin, more like fabric than tissue. But what is this? My unbelieving eyes detect some rose color tinting her cheeks, fading in and out. Is this a trick of an overstressed mind? No, it's really happening. And as this is happening, a metamorphosis as well. Slowly, this one time, icy cadaver is transforming into Lygia! Yes, Lygia! My other half is coming back to me. I will no longer be an empty shell. I will once again know happiness. She torpidly bends at the waist and sits up, steadily rises to her feet, and I rise with her. Smiling, she walks towards me, her arms open for an embrace, which I shall not deny. As we come together, the candle is accidentally knocked over and extinguished. We hug in darkness. I hold her so tightly that I barely realize how pallid and cold she feels, and why should I? Lygia has come back to me. Then I detect a sound, something of a chewing sound. Odd, since it is only us two. I also notice I'm starting to feel weak and that my blouse is rapidly becoming moist with a fluid neither warm or cold. The chewing sounds rather close. My weakness becomes exhaustion. And I fall asleep in Lygia's strengthening arms.
Oh, damn!
Ew!
So good! Oh my god!
Ew! Can you imagine?
Oh! Oh my god!
Oh god. Thoroughly creepy.
I'm laughing hard on this one, but it's so good. Oh, what a story! I mean, it's done so well with such articulation. I think he just did such a fabulous job. What do you think about that?
He really had me in the scene from the jump. And I was like, okay, where is this going, guys? Mourning his wife. And then we get the end. Child, I didn't come in. I have not read the original poem. The original Edgar Allan Poe short story or poem, prose, there it is. But the audio though, like the moment you start hearing the little crunching noise in the background is when everything sort of clicks into place. And honestly, I thought he was seeing things too. I was like, well, maybe he's sick or something from sitting next to corpse for so long, and I was thinking, okay, well, maybe he's going to go through a whole hallucination of seeing her awake and alive again. I didn't think that he would get eaten by his zombie wife. But the lead-up was so good. There was a little bit of humor. You know, there was some suspense. He's a really fantastic storyteller. He gets you hooked.
I agree. When the candle went out, I knew something was going to happen bad. As soon as it went dark, forget about it. This dude's dead. I was thinking that in my head, but I didn't know how or why. Oh, it's nothing like a good cannibal story or a good eaten alive story. There you go.
Good eating, that's what my Gia said.
So he's got a... Gonzo said that Steve has a series called Desolate Earth. Is that the Poe series or is it Steven's series, Gonzo? Because if Steve's got it, we can check it out here online, and I'm pretty sure he's got it on his YouTube channel. Gosh, so trolling for zombie Nicky going to get a bit. Okay, Steven has something called Desolate Earth, and it's something to check out on his page or his YouTube. So it sounds pretty damn
we
awesome.
We definitely will, and we need to plug Steven's YouTube more often because he Stephen's YouTube seems like the place to be for the stories, man.
No, I agree. Hey, Patrick, how you doing? Good to see Patrick out there.
Hi.
Are you ready to read?
Oh, mine?
Oh,
yes.
Look at that.
She's ready to read mine.
She's got it in book form.
Yes. Y'all go buy Stephen's book.
Absolutely. We recommend if anybody puts anything out, publication, support them by buying it.
Yeah.
And 100% for that.
And please feel free to let us know what you put and where it's available. We'll happily plug it for you.
Absolutely. Well, I got you to read a little bit of Garden Delight.
This poem is called No Way Home by Garden. On the cusp of something profound, we sink repeatedly below the water surface, drown our best intentions. Our good words fall unspoken to the ocean floor. We're toward personal, lack, eat well, shop in a haze of good feelings for the future, loving plans with each other. Revisiting Rome, enthralled by surprise sculptures secreted in little neighborhoods, we'd grab each other's arms, chattering our excitement. Home again, we resume familiar, poor habits. Seemingly rudderless, I wanted to scream. Remember Pompeii? We are no different. Call our house Pompey II. As oathly citizens, we prowl empty corridors, candles in hand that have no flame, loitering at vacant beds, holding conversations that don't exist as we fade away.
Oh, man. That was so freaking good. You notice how people are different when they're in different situations of, like, they're in a vacation with each other. They act a different way as if they, when they come home and are just almost to the point of complacent. That's what I feel right here. Mm. We have that type of situation.
I feel you. Definitely. I think that's exactly it. It's very to the point, this poem. It's like there's no other room for interpretation. I've never been divorced, but I feel, reading through this poem, that there is a divorce on the horizon. Like, you can sense this sort of deterioration of the vigor and the enthusiasm that the love had at one point. And it's interesting to note, because you would think that if two people truly love each other to that extent, then the environment that they are in or the location they're in should not matter, perhaps. But in this case, like you said, they come back and get complacent. It's sort of like, well, what made the relationship? Was it the fancy places that you went out at together? Or was it just the fact that you two were together? And the change of environment sort of brings that to the forefront, I think, is that the bonding before or the happiness before didn't come from each other. It came from the things that you did or the place you went or the material stuff that you bought when you went shopping. You know?
Yeah, no, 100%. And it's a sad state of affairs when something like that happens, because it should be about each other. It should be about the way that people interact no matter where they are, no matter what day it is. You know, just because it's an anniversary doesn't mean you have to act better. You know, you can act amazing the whole year round. You can love that person more and more if you choose to love them more and more. And there's little things that you can do. You can know their, figure out their love language, figure out what, where they are, as far as who they are, because we can always be a man and a woman, but can we be two people that actually know each other and are learning about each other each and every day?
Amen.
Well, what
right.
I am going to do next is I'm going to play my poem here. And here we go.
On the Tip of Your Tongue by JCA. You turn me to the clear liquid puddle with the reaches in my cracked bone ribs, whispers reaching from beyond the emerald forests and azure water whitecaps. Monolithic soldier, the aquamarine cast iceberg, floating in the sweet cream crests of the turquoise Arctic sea, waiting to sink the next Titanic. But on your satin lips sits the orange star that twirls the snow-capped Alberta clipper into the jasmine Caribbean breezes. That steams the compacted snow in my titanium lungs to water the malachite orchids and purple jade hibiscus. If music heals wounds neath bruised sternum, I will break my frozen jaw and commit to sing for a thousand dawns to see you smile. Dance spoonbill tangos under the coconut fronds. Recite Gilbran prose upon the silk skin, and I turn to steam on the tip of your tongue.
You always just do yourself, like, this is amazing. You're so love. Aura and crystal, everything. It gives you such range in this language. And for, I know this is going to sound weird. This may sound weird, but I love when you talk about rib cages and sternum. I don't know what it is, but there's something about you about the chest cavity is just amazing. It always, I don't know, you always know how to use body parts. This is going to sound weird, but you need to use some body parts in some very poetic way. Like, if I try to write a poem, like, using body parts as a metaphor, I don't know that I'll be able to do it and make it, like, sound good or have finesse the way that you do. Oh, you had some crazy, crazy good lines in this. And I think favorite, by far, I think my favorite is, If the heel wound meets bruised stern, I will break my frozen jaw and commit to sing for 1,000 songs to see you smile. That, just those three lines, you could have made the entire poem, those three lines, and it would have just, I melted. It's beautiful, like, ridiculously so. Ridiculously so, and so soulful, and you have so much imagery in here, the jasmine, the snow-capped Alberta. I actually need to ask you what that is. Is that a mountain? Alberta?
No, Alberta Clipper is a it's a form of weather pattern that brings cold air down from Canada.
Oh. Okay. Noted. Oh, this whole stands to me a lot more. Your sudden lips sits the orange star that is the snow-capped Alberta Clipper into the jasmine first movie. Oh, I get it. Wink, wink, not judge. I get it. But malachite orchids and purple jade discus, what an image. That's an image. I don't know how many people know what malachite looks like, but if you picture that, or you picture, like, purple jade in the shape of a hibiscus, it's you. The images sometimes you bring about are almost kind of being psychedelic. They are so vivid. And when I went through the poem, like, is this a Deb poem? The Deb prompties, I was catching some of the words. I was like, this seems like a Deb rap. But then I got to the bottom and said it's for Pretty Bird. And I was like, oh, okay, this makes sense now. But this is really, really good, Jay. I love this.
Yeah, she had a show the other day on Commit.
Sorry, go ahead.
And I went ahead and joined that show last second. I think, believe it or not, this poem took me about, I want to say, 45 minutes to write while I was at work. But the picture, I mean, was perfect. That picture is one of Blue Butterfly's contests, and I thought it just fit absolutely perfect in there. I love that picture.
You brought it to life perfectly with the starting of, like, you know, expressing it. You turn me to the clear liquid puddle, and then end with just on the tip of your tongue. That's beautiful. Like, I didn't even need the picture. If you didn't see the picture, the poem still perfectly made sense.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Well, what I am going to have done next is we're going to put your poem up next and have you read a little mocha.
All right. Now, I haven't read this block for a while. I write anything for 3 months. And then all of a sudden, last night I wrote like a poem. So here's one of them. This one is called The Original by Mocha 868.
I think your audio dropped out again. Can't hear you.
You can't hear me? Yeah.
Oh, there, I can hear you now.
Mic check. Should I start
over? Gotcha. Gotcha. Can you hear me?
I hear you, but should I start over?
Yeah, start over, please.
Poem is called The Original by Mocha 868. For a while, I forgot how cruel I could be. forgot how to sharpen my forgot how to growl and sneer before fixing my jaws on a thumping jugular vein. Thank you for reminding me. Perhaps when I was itching to sink my teeth into things. I wonder if you knew that. Did you glimpse glowing embers of starvation and rage laminated somewhere behind the blackness of my irises? I'll bet this isn't what you expected when I told you I liked pain. But isn't this your preference? I wanted to gift you tenderness, vulnerability, sway you in support and gentle, effeminate adoration, those quiet, clean girls in gingivitis. But you'd rather remember me by the clawed flesh in your back and the bleeding puncture wounds leave in your neck and form. I hope you heard me.
This is so good. So good, Mocha. Ultimately, I love your ability to talk straight to the reader. Okay? When you read in the poems that you write, they're, it's like you're talking to a person. You've got an individual who is that person. And you somehow have this incredible ability to turn the reader into that person. And they feel your fierceness. They feel your emotion. They feel whatever that you're bringing out within that poem. Now, you can have many different emotions that you write about, but for some reason, every single one of them, you're able to direct that straight to who's ever reading, and that person feels it. You know, I could feel that, what you were saying. It's like, she is pretty vicious there, you know, but I love it. I love that capability of doing that because it is like a talk. It is like a reference. It's like, this is who I am. You know what? Let me talk to you about this. And ultimately, at the end, you turn it around on them and say, but you'd rather remember me by the clawed flesh in your back and the bleeding puncture wounds I leave in your neck. You know, no matter what you tried to be for that person, they turned around and didn't appreciate it, and they didn't take into that account of how amazing you were for them, and they turned around and kind of bit back, you know, left with thinking you had this type of image instead of how you tried to treat them. And sometimes that, you know, what people see is two different things, and ultimately it affects how you relate to those people in the now, and whether, you know, so this is the way you thought it ended up being, and this is the way I thought I ended up treating you, you know. They're two different, you know, there's two different stories to the same story. And I think that you brought that out amazingly within this one. I loved it.
Thanks a lot, Jay. It felt good to and I think tone, the just me talking sort of tone of the poem, because I hadn't written so long, I sort of just wanted to get the feelings on the page and deal with everything from there. You know, writing is a release for most of us, and I've had a lot of stuff going on over the last 3 months that I feel like I needed to release it, some of it. So I had an entire day yesterday of reading. I was reading Love is a Dog from Hell, and there was this one poem that I make reference to, quiet, clean girls in gingham dresses. And that poem really struck me. And that poem, I don't know if you heard it, but that poem sort of helped bring me to this.
Well, that's pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. It's a great person to have inspire you. I got to admit that. Well, I think it's time for part 9. What do you think?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. And Titus stayed for your poem. How about that?
I know. Thank you right now.
All right, here we go, folks. Part 9, and he is putting together part 10 as we speak still, so we will get part 10 hopefully next week, but here's part 9.
Although Sleepy's chance circumstance may make it seem as if her advanced trance-like state could precipitate a semblance of remembrance, she didn't. No thought echoed in her mind for the first time in many nights. She did not dream about her loss. She did not dream about the fight. She did not dream about love at all costs. She just let the darkness swirl inside.
Please, darling, I've waited 5 years. Another 5 minutes simply won't do.
Sleepy's eyes tried to pry themselves wide, but the blood flow supplied was internally denied. She felt the welt dealt develop on the back of her head, and in that moment she felt content to be dead. Queen had snuck behind, taking advantage of Sleepy's shock. Too simple would it be, it seems, to pass through the door unlocked. Luckily, the blow, as dazing as it seemed, only left superficial wounds, and soon she could see. Most in that moment would break down and cry, her mind festering and turbid. Never once did Sleepy wonder why. She only ever asked if he did.
Did you ever love me?
Of course he didn't, you ugly little piglet. He wanted a real woman.
Charming and the Queen's lips pressed for a passionate kiss before starting again, torturing Sleepy's soul far worse than the bullets that pierced her skin. Magic mirrors stared, eyes wincing and furrowed, shining behind the traitorous duo in the glass atop the lofty bureau. Mind racing, pacing memories quite thorough, she couldn't find the words to speak, instead the words she'd borrow.
You can have the kingdom, I just want...
to win, and I win. I won. I took the throne from your naive father, and now I'm giving it to a real man.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, let the guards know about our little visitor, just in case he slips away again. Ooh, and darling?
Yes?
Bring the wine.
You are delectable.
Indeed, my love.
The queen strolled out of the room, closing the door shut, giving privacy to the two. As the fog lifted, Sleepy's gaze sifted for a weapon fate gifted so she could slay her lover twisted. Charming knew her simple plan, so he palmed his hilt inside his hand.
I absolutely love to hate that woman. The second we are married, I'm gonna wrap my hands around her frail, decrepit neck and snap it like a cracker. I see 10 steps ahead, which is why you'll find this room is woefully empty.
Sleepy's disgust and rage ignited.
Please tell me you're not this short-sighted. Do you think the people will celebrate a king who murdered his wife?
No, but they would celebrate a man avenging his lost love.
Charming spoke of his plan at hand, although not grand, would secure himself the land. Suspiciously, a package of great value will be delivered to the houses of prominence. Evidence of the queen's involvement in Sleepy's demise, as well as the queen's dreams of dominance. Charming explained with a pain expression.
You awoke and came home to find the queen had married your love. You revealed the ugly truth about what happened. The queen attacked you in a fit of rage, and seeing you die by the queen's hands, your dedicated, loving former suitor, me, would have no choice but to react with violence, especially after the queen manages to finish the job, and, you know, kill you. Or so they'll think. I grow tired of this oppressive state, and when the people find out how I've been betrayed, they will beg me. Bend a knee. Be our king.
Inside herself, Sleepy felt something worse, more queer than the mere damage dealt as she struggled to stand. Falling, she knelt, bended knee as if to beg to the mirror himself.
You seriously knew this whole time?
Sorry, kid. These are the breaks. But it makes any difference. I didn't tell you because...
I just wanted to see the look on your face.
Charming smiled, beguiled by the mirror's cruel tactics, all the while cackling over Sleepy's plan, believing it lacking.
But if there is a but,
I also didn't tell the Queen or Charmin about our plan.
Our?
You can't be serious. I'm on the eve of becoming king. I have soldiers. I have assassins. I have vast amount of wealth and power backing me. You have a treacherous mirror feeding you lies. And I'm supposed to be afraid? It took you nearly a month just to get caught.
It didn't take me a month to plan this. This is not the plan. There is no plan. Suicide missions don't require a whole lot of planning. I thought you were dead. My plan was to come here for all of this. I wanted it all pulled down, one by one.
Sleepy stood tall, ignoring her aches, cracking a smile as Charming's hand began to quake.
I want to pull it down, brick by brick.
Charming stood aloof with a goofy look upon his face, so Sleepy saved him some grace. She took a step forward in his direction, calmly speaking with a quiet expression. Sleepy's hand stretched across the etched stone gloss that sat atop crisscross stone and chisel designs she had missed more than she could provide.
It's time.
The future king's ignorance was clearly presented by an icy cold stare at the two he resented.
Time for what, your master plan?
Sleepy tilted her head towards the ceiling before a maddening sound sent the mercenaries reeling. A feeling of total loss descended over the castle, even with this army. Charming was not ready for this battle.
I have everything. The crown, the kingdom, the army. What could a pathetic girl like you possibly do to stop me?
Me? Nothing. But she sure as hell can.
I am the god of hellfire, and I bring you fire.
What?
You remember? Do you remember who
what?
That was?
I'm trying. I feel like we need to. We have.
Do you remember she
the
freed the dragon?
Where we can go over all. Right. Oh my God. We're over this entire series because. I want to hear the entire thing and, like, hype myself up for part 10. This is going to be so, so good. I can't wait to see finale. I can't wait to see if she's going to win. Well, she has to win. She's a protagonist, right? But you never know with Gonzo because Gonzo can just flip the entire script.
I just have a feeling this has something. Magic Mirror's got some... something planned in the background. I just, that's my feeling. That's my feeling,
right?
Behind this whole thing.
What if
oh my gosh,
is the one who takes over the kingdom at the end?
Did you like him putting the doors in there and the background music? I don't know if you noticed that. The song People Are Strange.
I actually don't know the song, so I did miss it, but I'm glad you caught it.
People Are Strange. When you're a stranger, faces seem ugly when you're alone.
What I loved was the internal rhyme. Sleepy's chance circumstance may make it seem as if her advanced trance-like state could precipitate a semblance of remembrance. That is not the easiest thing to do, to an internal rhyme into... a story where you have but already sort of dictated in advance. And that I respect for sure. Because when he read it out loud, the way that it flowed was so perfect because of how he rhymed.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about that. I think it's absolutely a brilliant piece. The whole thing, oh my gosh. And all of a sudden I'm like,
the whole
who is that?
Brilliant.
Who is he talking about? And then I remember she freed that dragon and that dragon flew away. And I'm like, oh my gosh, the dragon's back.
the dragon. It's about to go full Game of Thrones in this bitch.
Yeah, see what he put there? He put, when you're strange, no one remembers your name. That's how the song goes. That's how the chorus goes. When you're strange,
I'm going to look up that
no
song when we're done.
No one remembers your name. What's that?
I said, let's look up that song when we're done.
Oh, yeah. It's an awesome song. Let me see. Can you tell him that 15 minutes is okay for part 10? Because I have no problem with it.
No, I have no problem with it at all. It's part 10, especially considering, Gonzo, that we want to get our own show so that we can do the release part 10.
Yeah, you do not need to cut it down, brother. We will take it as is. We need to have it.
We are, taking the whole thing. You do not need to worry at all. You go off. And the next show that we have is going to be a Gonzo-dedicated show so that we can do the full 10 parts of this story and sit down and, like, watch it like a Netflix special.
That would be freaking awesome. Oh, my God. Oh, God. I love it. His music choices, though, are just phenomenal. His background audio is phenomenal. The sound effects and everything.
Gonzo is giving us professional-level scoring with his pieces. The production value on this is insane.
And I'm going to let you know something, and this is going to be extra special. After Gonzo gets done with this, me and him are going to be working on the Lawrence 67 poems with Alfie and Nigel.
Oh, really? Like, are you going to do the productions with Lawrence writing?
Yes, and Lawrence wants that.
I can't win that.
So that's going to be fun. That's going to be a fun little experiment that we're going to be trying, and I'm going to be sending him audio back and forth, and he's going to put the production pieces together.
Feel free to request if you guys ever need help, if you want a over for Princess or anything. I'm happy to help.
Yeah, we could use a voice for Princess, couldn't we, Gonzo? I think so.
I'm glad that Lawrence can add it to his stuff.
Well, you've got to remember, though, he breaks down the fourth wall at times, so he puts our normal voices in there. So if you do Princess's voice, you're going to have to change your voice for it.
I can try. I can do that. I can. Okay. You can give me some tips, John. You're great at growing your voice.
I am a voice actor, by the way, and I do voices, so I really enjoy that as well. Yeah, see that? He can change, that's right, he can change your voice if you just send him something normal. So he has the ability to affect voices as well. Yeah, you see that? Princess sounds like she should have a high-class British accent. I like that. I know you could do a British accent, too.
I do believe I can do British accent.
I know you could. I knew it. All right. Well, talking about Lawrence 67, I am going to go ahead and read a little poem from Lawrence 67 called Advice from the Expert. Hello, everybody out there in poetry land.
and welcome to the show. Today we have an interview with the noted author and advice columnist for the Idiot Gazette. He has a PhD in idiocracy, a master's in bullshit, and is the winner of the coveted You Are Stupid Award. He has a Lifetime Achievement Medal in Dumbass Shit Done, also the holder of a black belt with clusters in You Think I'm Stupid? Don't answer that. And he will be discussing his new book entitled You Lying Bitch. Here is Professor Lauren 67, author, advice columnist, and all-around good guy. He will be discussing the way to find $10 that you may have lost or misplaced. Hello, Professor L67. Nice to be here. Well, it's kind of tricky, you know, as you get on age when you have a $10 bill that you've been saving to go get a cheeseburger and fries from McDonald's, but you can't find said $10. Well, here's an easy way to find it. First, put down the glass pipe. Then, recollect when the last time was that you saw your wayward $10. Envision where you were when it went away. Go back to that spot and trash everything in sight until you find the weary $10. If you still don't find it, then go back home through your baby mama's purse and take out $10, stick it in your pocket, go to McDonald's and get a Happy Meal. And forget that you've got a lying bitch baby mama. Well, that's about all the time we have for this interview. Thank you for all for coming, and don't forget to buy Professor 67's book, You Lying Bitch, on sale now at all places where good books are sold. Thank you for coming, and good night.
Wow. I don't have a baby mama to take $10 out of her purse. I want my money back. I want my money back for this book. This book did not help me find my $10. But this is a good book, though. You Lying Bitch. There it is. That's a wonderful title. I think everyone can relate to that book. Gonzo says, I wonder if he thinks that bitch is lying. All great plans begin with that first step. First the neighbor's dog, put down the glass pipe first. Fight the neighbor's dog, put down the glass pipe first.
Put down that glass pipe.
Low-key wondering what was in that pipe. What's in the pipe, Lauren?
I think we all know.
A little bit of cannabis, a little bit of the devil's lettuce, that pipe.
Maybe a little bit worse than that.
Oh my God. I hope it's crack pipe. Crack pipe. We don't support that.
Oh my gosh, that was funny. Well, maybe the baby mama can afford it. I don't know.
I love taking all the money from her government.
Still checks.
Don't
I don't
find
know.
It. If, right? Her fucking, what is it? Is it disability? No, it's not your disability.
It's
check.
The welfare check.
Other one. The welfare check. That's the word I was looking for. The welfare check. Or you could have just stolen her EBT card.
There you go. Oh, my God. This is great. Oh, his mind, the way it goes, it is so brilliant. I love that.
I do. Imagine this with Gonzo production, though. Gonzo put, the audience in the background, and he would have, a whole perfect announcer voice. I cannot wait for this collaboration of Gonzo, L67, and JCA, three of my favorite people in the whole world.
Yeah, we're going to have a fun time doing it. And, yeah, he said it would be funny to record. He loves that concept. And I know Lawrence 67 would love more of his stuff recorded. All right, I want to tell you, in regular time, we've got about 8.5 minutes left. I want to just put a thank you out to everybody. We're gonna spend a little overtime reading a few poems. I know one or two. But I want to thank everybody who wrote for us, everybody out on the board, which was Nine, Agonzo, and Titus, and Patrick. Thank you all for supporting us. We really appreciate you. Everybody who wrote for us, sent in audios, you guys, and oh, Steve was out on the board too, so I can't forget about Steve. Glad that he popped his head in. It was great to hear his freaking incredible audio. And Mocha, mm-hmm. Once again, thank you for always being here. You deserve all the praises you get because you are absolutely awesome.
Thank you so much, Jay. Thank you again to everyone who constantly shows up and supports both Jay and I and everything in the group and the show. You guys make it possible. I mean, yeah, Jay and I do the work, but there wouldn't be anybody to work for if you weren't here. So we truly appreciate every single last one of you showing up every week to give us a purpose, to a reason to keep doing what we do. We enjoy this. We love you all. We love reading your stuff and supporting you as much as we possibly can. We want to continue to do this and make it bigger than it is now. And I'm very grateful to each of you for the opportunity to do that. Quick reminder that the Prompt Your Party lines are still on. You can sign up in the topic, and all the rules are there. The prompt pile is still open if there are any prompts that you would like to give someone in that game and it's not a part of the pile, feel free to go to the prompt pile topic and add that to the pile. And I can't wait to see what everybody comes up with, what everybody prompt partners to write, you know, what that brings out in each other. It's going to be beautiful, I'm sure of it. And a special thank you to Titus for that gorgeous, gorgeous poem that he wrote for me today. I'm so honored to be appreciated by every one of you. Thank you.
That's awesome. Well, I'm going to put you to work before we get off the air, and I'm going to have you read Irish Rose for us.
Oh, yay. So this poem is called A Different Day of Speech by Irish Rose. Sometimes I write my heart out, allow words naturally to bleed my thoughts free about life and our repressively sick world that I love. She's become more and more becoming, poor earth. This soiled but beautifully made living thing that now grows more grotesque daily, dying and changing. This belongs to you and me, reminding me of a video game, except where this call to battle simply no honor, the imagery highlights surreally as it becomes familiar. Pandemic, climate change, social upheaval, Ukraine war, then more and more familiar, more personal, job, food, medical care, safety. More vulnerable thing, darker negative of itself, to the last fractal, bathed in shifting, sifting shades of time, illustrated in a real, living, breathing color. 2022 is a mother. Life has always been in a dance with time, but spring is here. In life, you're alive. Today is sunny, Sunday bright. Though intimately and precariously we live day by day, crashing into the buffer of life, pushing against time with massive waves, may change. Many may be lost in the river of yin and yang, where seeds of wisdom were once sown, but now are carelessly strewn across the earth among all men, now scattered haphazardly into the deep cloud furrows of clay, in the human soul alone and exposed to the change, caught in the whirlwind between nature and men, feeling the dark edges of the unknown where the other higher powers exploit, feel now, crawling in close, full display at dawn, trying to wrap flailing fingers of fear about us. But I repress that sting, resisting my fear, denying it free rent in my head or my soul, bashing it with hope daily. Hope is always alive. Out there in the dark of Ukraine, lives filled with pain, and here in the diverse un-United States, we're building at a end poem.
Whew. Yeah, there is so much to this piece. It has got depth upon depth of how the world is ruining itself. And you know what? In a lot of ways, she's absolutely right. There's so much out there about digging into what we should be and how we should be. And it's just quite awful. It's awful, and I think she does a great job of portraying what she wants to say in this. I think that is a wonderful way that she put that. Actually, quite brilliant. So, wonderful job there, because we do have so much that we got going wrong. This world is looking uglier and uglier each day as we go along. What do you think?
It is true. I felt it as I read through, just from the way that she started saying, sometimes I write my heart out, allowing the words naturally to bleed my thoughts free about life. And I relate to that considering, like I said, last night, I just wrote my heart out. I wasn't trying to, be poetic or deliver a very specific sort of poignant message. I just wanted to express the way that I felt about going through at the point in time. And she summarized not something she alone is feeling, but I think something everyone right now. The world is not a pretty place right now, not anymore. She starts off listing the overall sort of general problems that everyone is affected by, the pandemic, the climate change, the social upheaval, the war, then more familiar, more personal, your job, food, medical care, safety. And it really hit home for me personally because, yeah, I experienced all those things, the pandemic, the climate change, the social upheaval, and the Ukrainian war. I mean, I didn't experience it from being there, but we have the internet now, and it was a horrifying experience to be able to sit from the comfort of my home in a warm, soft bed, knowing that I was safe, and watching bombs fall on people's heads live. It's a strange, horrifying, sort of desensitizing experience to be able to sit and watch people die, literally, on a screen and know that you can do absolutely nothing about it, no matter how much you want to. It's affected people regardless whether you lived in the Ukraine or not. It affects all of us. It's a human problem. War is a human problem. It's not just a Ukrainian Russian problem or a NATO problem. You know, it concerns all of us. The loss of innocent life should concern all of us. And then for her to go further down to more familiar and more personal things like your job, your food, medical care, and safety, I think regardless of what economic status you're at, unless you're like really, really freaking rich, the 99% of us that, let's say, live normally in this world, we're all concerned with things. I've been concerned with those things for the last 2 years since COVID started. Employment opportunities are not great. Food prices keep rising. Medical care is getting harder and harder. Just the other day, for whatever reason that I can't even name, Trinidad was short on basic pharmaceutical drug, Panadol. And that's probably because the demand for these, because of the pandemic, is raising to an unprecedented level that nobody saw coming. Safety in every aspect now is a huge, huge problem for us. We're all still under the vague threat of a nuclear war. We're all still under the threat of a pandemic. And then within both of those things, there's a rise in crime because are suffering. You know, people have lost their jobs. People don't have access to the basic things that they need, like their food and their medical care. And so when those people don't feel safe, some of them see it on themselves to engage in actions that make it unsafe for the rest of us, such as crime, robberies. I mean, the shootings in the United States, hospitals, groceries. I saw a few Americans running it on Twitter, and apparently there's been mass shootings at least once every day since it has started, but they've not all been publicized or talked about. And that's a huge problem. That is a huge, huge problem. I'm not even an American, but I can see very vividly and very obviously that the problems with gun violence in the United States are becoming out of hand. And it sort of feels that we're all balancing on the edge of a knife, right? Regardless of where you live or where you're from. Irish's poem explores all of that and meant that, and this is what makes it so great, because she just wanted to sit here and talk to you as a human being about what she's feeling and what she's experiencing. And in a way, it's a poem that welcomes everyone that reads it to share their feelings or to talk about, you know, what feels has been going on with them for the last 2 years. I think this is really, it was a necessary right. It was necessary to say and to get out there, and I'm glad that she submitted this today.
Yeah, I question so much on all of these big corporations and their concern about society, whether they really do give a damn about society. I saw the staggering statistic, because this is an actual public record. This is not something someone made up. But the top three makers of the vaccine for the pandemic, they make $1,000 USD between the three of them every second.
Wow. $1,000 every second. That's $6,000. No, that's 60 in a minute, and there's how many minutes in an hour? 60, maybe, and then 24 hours in a day.
Millions.
That is an insane amount of money.
They make millions daily. It's mind blowing. It's staggering. And what is this? Is this a fact of greed or is this a fact of actual well-being? You really have to ask those questions. And stuff like the NRA, I mean, you know, I'll bring it up here, how much money they get and how much money everybody gets. Are really people concerned more about the money or the welfare of society these days? And we are heading.
Oh, it's definitely the money.
To I think we're heading to a reboot. I really do.
Oh,
I think
like
we are heading
that,
to
but
a reboot.
The question is it how strong of a reboot are we going for? Are we just going to unplug it and plug it back in, or are we factory reset the entire thing? Is my question. Because if levels finish, unplug something and plug it back in, then okay, you get a quick restart, and you know, it still works the way it used to. It still got all the basic programs in it. You just, you know, start. But if you factory reset some shit, that means we're all going back to blank, and we're all going back to page one, and now you need to reprogram all of the systems that we use. And I'm leaning a little bit towards factory resetting because it is clear that the system that we currently have does not work for the sake of equality. It's built for equality. It's built to keep rich people rich and comfortable and keep poor people poor and suffering and supporting them. And there's no way on God's good through God's eyes, shall that be fair? The Bible says the meek shall inherit the earth. You know? And right now the meek are the ones that are suffering the most. This cannot be in the eyes of God. I'm not even Christian, but, you know, this can't be right.
It reminds me of the song Signs. You know, it's like, and the sign said, anyone caught trespassing would be shot on sight. Sox jumped the fence and yelled to the house, man, what gives you the right? If God was here, he'd tell you straight to your face, you're some kind of sinner. You know, I'm like, yeah, all this freaking greed, you know, in the world. And what is it doing for us? Not a whole hell of a lot.
You know what's a prime example of that greed? Elon Musk. Now, I don't know if you follow any news about him at all. Elon came out, I think it was a year or something like that, or a couple of years ago, saying if the UN would provide him with a plan to end world hunger, if they came up with the plan, Elon said publicly that he would fund it, right? He would put about $20 billion or so into funding the plan that the UN came up with to end world hunger. Just the other day, just mind you, just the other day, at the beginning of this year, Elon Musk bought Twitter. So Elon Musk is now the owner and CEO of Twitter, which he was not before. Which, by the way, a lot of their employees themselves said that they really did not want. And as a result of Elon buying Twitter, most of them actually left. Most of them quit. Right now, Twitter is short on employees because Elon bought it. But here's the kicker. Elon bought Twitter for about $24 billion or 28, or I think it was like $42 billion or something like that. And the point is that he spent more money buying Twitter for petty reasons, mind you. He spent more money buying Twitter than
he offered to spend to end world hunger. And mind you, this is considering that the UN actually did provide him the plan to end world hunger. And he didn't do it. He literally straight up didn't do it. And then went and bought Twitter for almost double the amount to be petty.
You look at,
and now
you look
he's
at
laying people off. He's laying off from Tesla. Wait, guess where it's at? He's laying people off from Tesla, his own company, because of the money that he's sort of losing buying Twitter, because now he can't pay Twitter employees. So that's the funny story. And you can't tell me after that it's not pure greed.
No, you're dead on that. What a sad state of affairs we're in. Yeah, I do think
you
know, bottom line is the world's economy is trashed already. I mean, there's no freaking world economy. Every country has borrowed from every country, and there's really nothing but things people owe. All these countries in debt and debt and debt, and they'll never ever be able to get out of debt. And it's pretty much eventually it's going to catch up to him. Eventually it's going to catch up to
him. It's going to catch up to all of us. Like you said, there's no world economy. We've all bought from each other. So in a way, technically speaking, we're all fucking broke.
That's right. We are. All right. I'm going to go ahead and read the final poem for our show. So this is a collaboration between Driscona and Pyrosis. There we go.
Nice.
And this is called Our Bursting Garden. Gentle strokes of yearning caress, blushed pastels, as hues of thy resplendent desire bloom the realm, feathering a bed of petals to entice our amour among the wellspring of this ardorous stream. Butterflies flit from my seething womb, filling the air with fluttering fervor, your torch across my wanton flesh like electricity dancing through wires. The scent of thy surrender invades all senses like an enchantment of passionate poise, curling whispers of need from our parched rims to mutter the incantations of our blending. Our bursting garden within collapsing shades, yellow, orange, red, green, purple, and blue, all the brilliant colors that I see in you as we dance this exotic, euphoric dance. Gentle strokes of thy resplendent petals, streams, seething, fervor, wanton flesh like electricity dancing invades all senses, like an enchantment, curling whispers of our blending, bursting garden, and all the brilliant colors we dance. This is kind of cool. You know that? I really like this because what is done within this is they've taken different words from each of the main stanzas and created like a secondary poem to the main poem, and like the gentle strokes of thy resplendent petals. I think that is
brilliant. I was wondering if at first it was like a word bank or something, because I saw that there were specific words
highlighted. But now I see Lupid. It's sort of like a similar concept to an acrostic, I would guess, where you fit, you know, other things in, and those other things, when you take them out, they spell out something else. I think we're supposed to read this together, Jay.
Yeah, I see that now. It's like I'm supposed to read the first, then you
wanna...
second, third. Yeah, we can do that again. You want to do that?
We can do it again. Yeah. So
yeah,
let's
see how it's... Okay, let me look at the bottom. Okay, we'll do every other one. I'll start out. Gentle strokes of yearning caress, blushed pastels, as hues of thy resplendent desire bloom the realm, feathering a bed of petals to entice our armor among the wellspring of this arduous stream.
Butterflies flit from my seething womb, filling the air with erring fervor. Your touch, heat across my wanton flesh, like electricity dancing through wires.
The scent of thy surrender invades all senses, like an enchantment of passionate poise, curling whispers of need from our parched rims to mutter the incantations of our blending.
Our bursting garden within collapsing shades, yellow, orange, red, green, purple, and blue, all the brilliant colors that I see in you as we dance this exotic, euphoric.
Gentle strokes of thy resplendent petals, stream seething fervor.
Wanton like a sea, dancing invades the senses like an enchantment.
Curling whispers of our blending, bursting garden and all the brilliant colors we dance.
Okay.
That is like it's like a sigh. It's like at the end there, it's like a deep breath,
yeah,
and everything like that. I loved it.
Drizzy is always so wonderfully sensual, and this was, it's like it's never gauche. It's never dirty or too much. And when she's with Pyrosis and you feel the love in there, it's heart numbing actually. It's so sweet. And I love this concept that they did with making two different poems and also making us read it back and forth as well, because it feels like a conversation. Now it sort of feels like a burr union is actually taking place when you go back and forth like that. It brings a whole new...
If I was in Italy, they'd say it's like a Romeo and Juliet.
It kind of is. And someone commented that it doesn't even seem like two different writers. And he's right. You don't sense any, there's no separation between the two of them at all. It's sort of like they speak in one voice, which is the ultimate sign of romance, I think, if you're a writer. It's like, oh, we speak in one voice, you finish each other's words. That's beautiful. I love that they share their love with us like that. That's nice. I'm mushy right now.
No, yeah, it is nice. Well, you've been melted down
you
this
be
entire show.
I cried, and now you're making me go all soft.
I know, what's wrong?
Oh, you, y'all got me at the most emotional time of the month, I'm saying.
Well, I'm glad that you feel blessed and you feel happy and you feel like that. As long as you're smiling, that's the important part.
I'm glad we saved this one for last, Jay.
I do too. All right. Well, with that, like I said, everybody, thank you again. Don't forget about the Prompt Your Partner.
Prompt Your Partner.
Don't forget about Prompt Your Partner, and we look forward to seeing everybody next week as well. And expect a DM for me about Prompt Your Partner, because I will definitely put this out to everybody here very shortly. So thank you once again, everybody.
Yeah,
Mocha, thank you.
Thank you, Jay. Thank you for being here. I was going to say, if anyone feels like they may need more time for the Prompt Your Partner game, you can message either Jay or I and let us know, and we will consider extending the deadline, because we want everybody to have enough time to produce something that they are happy with.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's time for me to finish getting ready and head off to work. And you have an amazing day all the way in Tobago. So.
And you have a wonderful day all the way down in Wisconsin.
Wisconsin.
Thank you. I can't do it.
Oh, you can't? Oh, don't you know?
you sound Canadian.
I'm up here in Wisconsin. That's part of my sound, my voice acting right there, folks. There you go. You know, when you actually put in for a part, they ask you at times, can you do accents? And one of the accents they put on the thing is, can you do a Minnesotan accent?
Minnesota?
Minnesota.
Oh, you can talk like you're from
Minnesota. Yeah, you betcha.
I don't think I could do that with a straight face. Oh, you betcha.
Oh, gosh.
No.
You go up into the northwestern part of Minnesota, and that's how they really, really do talk. It's wild.
Wow. Some stereotypes are based in fact.
Yes, and that one is. You know, there I said it, you know. I can't. When I live up here, I can't get rid of those two words. But, all right, folks, that is going to be the show. I'm going to hit the play button on the outro music, and we will see everybody later. We love you all, and
see you all next week.
Thank you for
same bad time, same
visiting
bad channel.
The living room. Absolutely.